Lay's potato chips, Ruffles potato chips, or Pringles?
Pringles.
No. Nah. I mean, back in the day, maybe, but...
What do you mean, back in the day?
Like, when I was, like, 10, Pringles were the best.
Wow!
Now, it's like cheese popcorn. They just, like, it's just sort of, like, the fakest fakey fake.
It's, again, though, with the residue of the snack food... When you're eating Lay's, it's just grease and salt everywhere. Can't pick up a paper without leaving a grease spot. Pringles, on the other hand, I can, like, hold it by the edge. Don't get anything on my fingers. It's perfectly shaped to the contour of my tongue. And I never have to worry about it.
Then you have a very strangely shaped tongue.
Yes.
Just sort of, like, curls up on
it's
the
sides.
Large,
it's very yeah. long.
It's like a duck bill inverted. Just...
I can't tell if you're speaking from experience being my husband or...
I plead the fifth?
That's probably wise.
It's got weird
Kyle. I wouldn't want to be thrust into the tiebreaker role already.
Get ready.
That'd be a weird thing to have you tiebreak. Yeah. Please don't ever tiebreak that.
That's not the first...
That's not... Wait, what? Time out. That's not the first what, Kyle?
Strange thing. Maybe the strangest, but not the first strange thing I've been called in to tiebreak on. Let's just admit that and preferably move on because this conversation is going to get really weird really fast.
So, Kyle.
I think I'd have to go with Ruffles here because, yes, like I like Lay's potato chips every now and again, but you're very right in that they do have that just overwhelmingly mm-hmm. I'm nothing but salt and grease factor. And Pringles, like I said, great when I was 10. Now they just sort of feel too fakey to me. So Ruffles are kind of like a good in-between. But if I was really going to settle, I'd have to subvert the entire conversation and go with Doritos. Anyway,
that wasn't
so.
An option. You,
you know,
pick one
I
of
did
the
not
three.
Put Doritos into the conversation. Because I was thinking strictly potato chips, not
thus,
flavored
chips.
Thus,
it is a no-fly zone. You didn't list it. We can't discuss it.
Okay, fine.
Them's the rules.
They don't exist. Doritos don't
These
exist.
These rules that we...
Apparently, tiebreaker doesn't believe in rules.
That's why I'm the tiebreaker.
It's got
How
awkward,
else am
guys.
I supposed to settle these things?
You can't introduce a new category of chip that hasn't been listed. I don't care if you're the tiebreaker or not. You can't tiebreak by being like, have you considered Doritos?
I weighed in. To the conversation and made an additional suggestion that was relevant.
Null and void.
I would allow
the original conversation.
I would allow an addition of baked Lay's versus traditional Lay's.
Okay, fine. If we're going to go with that route, then absolutely baked Lay's all day long.
Okay.
But I like the options Pringles gives me because you didn't even specify what type of Pringles.
I meant original. I
oh,
said Pringles,
I still, I actually,
meaning
I think
the original.
I'd still go with.
Once you pop, you can't stop.
I'll eat that whole tube. I'll tell you what.
I mean, yeah. Who wouldn't, really?
Apparently, 20-whatever...
Bearded Kyle.
Old Kyle. 10-year-old Kyle and I will hang out and eat Pringles.
And bearded Kyle and I will hang out and eat Ruffles. I am a Ruffles fan myself. I will
right,
eat
well,
traditional
go.
Ruffles all day long.
Ruffles. Chip of the patriarchy.
Yeah, had to go there.
Yes.
That might be a show title right there, Chip of the Patriarchy.
You're welcome.
All right.
Well, at that point, we're going to transition.
Good plan. Moving on.
We've lost so many listeners.
Oh,
so
just falling apart.
Buckle in, everybody. This is episode 2 of the Min-Max podcast. So, if you guys are joining us for the first time, my name is Alan. I am the photographer of the photographer and two seminarians. I am married to Ashley, the female on this podcast.
Hi, my name is Ashley Mowers. I am a woman, as has been established. When I was a child, I used to be mistaken for my brother on the phone because I apparently had a very deep voice.
And I'm Kyle. The tiebreaker, once again, in this relationship. I am also a student at Northern Seminary. This is me.
Have you ever been mistaken for a woman on the phone?
Not that I know of, but I've frequently been mistaken for my father on the phone.
Well, that's not insulting.
I know. It's you know what?
Again, just hoping for a bonding moment.
I think, and you just, you know, I think we just should avoid having conversations in this podcast now, because clearly you and I are going nowhere fast right now.
Unfortunately, Kyle and I are sitting directly opposite each other at the table, so we have to look at each other. We have to turn to look at Alan, but we look directly at one another while we're recording regardless.
And
it's
going to
be a really entertaining.
At them.
Yeah, it's real creepy.
Into their souls, through their eye holes. That silence you
Which
hear?
Are evidently not occupied by our eyeballs.
No, that's just fleshy matter. I see your soul.
Make it stop.
Anywho.
Somebody help.
Things got weird.
Things got weird a long time ago.
All right, so we're going to roll into our first topic for the day, which is some feedback.
Yeah, so we got some really interesting and a lot of feedback from our first episode, which I don't think any of us was expecting.
No,
not a bit.
We kind of just thought, oh, we're going to make a podcast. It'll be fun. We'll just put it up there. It'll be no
we'll
big
have, like,
deal.
Two people who actually listen regularly for the first like,
right?
3 months.
Our moms.
Yeah, right.
Some close friends who say, yeah, I'll support you. They listen to half of the episode and go, not for me, but never tell us.
Right.
So you did so good.
Yeah.
We loved it. It was so
You're
funny.
It
sounded
yeah.
so great.
Right. You guys are hilarious. But instead, we got an email. We got a couple text messages from people that we hadn't anticipated hearing from quite so quickly. I got a whole 5-page document from one of our friends of just questions. I mean, some of the feedback we got, questions that I wasn't expecting us to get, that I honestly, when we were talking about developing this podcast, hadn't anticipated receiving these questions, because I think it's just one of those things that we've all talked about being givens for us that we wanted to be careful of, but clearly we weren't careful enough on. Because questions that we received were like, what is a seminarian? What is God time? What is the Holy Spirit? So questions that all of us being Christians, we take for granted.
Right.
That I'm so glad somebody asked, because that's the thing is we have a mixed audience of people who just identify as geeks or nerds or solely identify as Christians that are just interested in what the heck we're doing. And maybe a few that cross over that identify as both, but very few. And it's part of why we wanted to make this podcast, was to build a bridge there. But in my head, I was thinking, we'll probably talk about geek stuff the most. And, you know, theology stuff will probably be on the back end, no big deal. Because I just assumed people wouldn't be very interested. The people who already know the terms wouldn't ask. And the people who aren't coming to the podcast for the theology bits wouldn't care enough.
Sure.
So the fact that we're getting these questions is honestly really exciting for me. And to me, I just want to thank those people that are asking and say thank you for doing so and trusting us with those questions. Because it is hard to ask questions that are one, deep.
Right.
Two, it's putting yourself in a vulnerable position to ask three people, whether you know us or not, these specific questions. I don't know how you guys felt about some of the feedback we received.
I mean, I think I would echo a lot of the things that you were just saying, that it was a little shocking and kind of overwhelming, in the sense of, like, when, you know, we were sitting down and deciding to do this, it was a little bit of a, for me, it was stepping outside of my comfort zone and having to, like, okay, so I'm just going to, like, do this now and talk about things that are going to be on the internet. And that was kind of just as someone who is historically tried to keep his online presence pretty minimal, just like, wow, that's frightening. And then we jumped in and did it, and then people are like getting on board really fast, I mean, relatively speaking. And so it was really cool to actually have that as like an encouragement, and to see like, what, this is a crossroads people are actually interested in having a conversation about. And I think it's very fun and very rewarding that this world that I think all three of us have lived in for so long, mm-hmm. we're now getting to step into and like invite other people to actually openly engage in that space, because we know we're not the only ones,
right?
Especially not the only ones who
live on either side of that bridge, but to be the ones who are interested in bridging that gap and to have a lot of people get on board with that so quickly is really cool. And yeah, I agree that hearing those same deep and meaningful questions just right off the bat is so cool, and it's so meaningful, and I think we're all really excited to start to engage with those things and deal with them on the cast. So
yeah, I definitely was really blown away too. Like, I knew I had a hunch we might maybe get a little bit of feedback, but I was expecting that purely from friends. But to get some of the feedback that we have gotten and just having people join in the conversation, it's really blown me away. Like, the amount of feedback we've got, the text messages from friends and people that we know or people that we went to school with saying, this is awesome. Like, I really enjoy the balance that you guys are striking. Or we have friends who really love gaming and they might have been churched or they had a little bit of church experience and that was negative because of gaming. And I know I definitely resonated with that type of feedback. And it was super cool to hear the people respond and get this type of input from them. And it clearly shows that we're kind of hitting something.
Yeah. What it encourages for me is that there is a need for a space for people to re-engage with one or both of these communities in a way that allows them to feel safe to do so, as opposed to you're in church now, these are the behaviors that are expected of you, mm-hmm. so fall in line, or vice versa. Even at some game stores that I've been to, you're not truly a geek or a nerd unless you know this reference, this game, etc.
Right.
And so you're not welcome here. Which kind of brings me, at least, to the email that we received, which was from an old friend of mine in high school, actually. I was really excited to receive this email, and it was great. It was one of the ones that I really made sure to go through thoroughly. And I'll just read, you know, the first two paragraphs of it, because it's so good. So Kimberly writes, "Hi, Min-Max Pod Crew. I really enjoyed the first episode, and I can honestly say it caused me to examine in myself a lot of thoughts and feelings that I don't often allow time to fully develop. I genuinely appreciate your roles in fostering that conversation, if you will, with myself. I think the work you're doing is valuable, and I can't wait to see what you all come up with in the future. Though I'm not, nor have I ever been, much into video games, I did spend a good portion of my formative years role-playing online, writing fan fiction, and engaging in some of the parts of geek culture that specifically appealed to me. I just about had to pull off the road when Ashley name-dropped Neopets. Neopets was my jam. Even now, I kind of exist in a weird space where I feel a bit hesitant to call myself a part of nerd or geek culture, because while there are certainly a lot of geeky things that appeal to me, there are also a lot that don't. I only make this observation because I think it ties into Ashley's observation about the usefulness, perhaps even necessity, of having an online persona when you feel as though you don't have a safe space to express certain parts of yourself in real life. If I went to a con or a similar event, would I be geek enough?" So this is the part of the conversation that I kind of want to get started. That question really leapt out at me. If I went to a con or a similar event, would I be geek enough? So what our definitions of geek and nerd are, how they've kind of developed over time, how we identify ourselves as a part of one culture or the other. I just want to speak almost directly to Kim right now. I have consistently, whenever I've spoken about you to other friends, I've consistently referred to you as my very first GM or game master, for those of you who aren't familiar with that term, because of the online role playing that you mentioned. Because Kimberly created these two really great online role-playing websites. One was Harry Potter, and I think it was called Harry Potter Secret World, if I'm remembering correctly. And the other one was, I'm forgetting the full name, but it was like Lands of Elysium or the World of Elysium or something. And she crafted that world entirely from scratch. Her world building was top-notch. And it really got me into role-playing games, altogether. And we didn't have any hard and fast rules. She moderated both websites really thoroughly, but we weren't doing D&D or Pathfinder quite yet. But it still got me into that headspace, and it gave me a place to explore that world creatively. And she also was the first person to introduce me to Kingdom Hearts. And I remember, if I'm remembering correctly, she played all of the Kingdom Hearts games that were out by the time we were in high school, wherever it ended, because that was one I never got into, but she was thoroughly into it. So the fact that, Kimberly, that you're questioning whether you're geek enough or not, when you're one of the few people I know that I really solidly reference as being as geeky as I am, if not more so, and kind of, I mean, I relate to that as like a badge of honor. I really do think you are plenty geek enough to go to a con. If you're not, then I certainly am not. And you're also one of few people that knows more about Harry Potter than anybody else than I know. I mean, if you guys have a chance, I don't know if she would ever be willing to go openly about this, but her daughter's nursery is completely Harry Potter themed. And it is so cool looking.
That's
it
fantastic.
Is so
that
right,
is
exactly.
Amazing.
And it's that kind of thing where I look at when I read Kim's email and I go, "Yes, you're geeky enough. Are you kidding me?" So I don't know. What do you guys think? What is geeky enough, or what is the terminology to you? I do have the Merriam-Webster dictionary definitions, which I can read after you guys describe what you think geeky is.
Well, I definitely love to pick up this thread because I think I can relate a lot to where she's coming from with that question, because I think I've also felt a lot of that. Like, there's this sort of maybe a perceived pressure within the nerd and geek community where it's like everybody just understands everything, which is so hard, because even within that realm that we call nerd and geek culture, there are so many subcultures. Yeah. Like you're a nerd and you can be super into anime, or you can be a hardcore like Magic the Gathering player, or you can be a huge like Star Wars or Star Trek fan, or a huge D&D fan, or you play just other role playing games. You know, like, there's so many different categories that you can fit into, and there's so many, like, there's just so much nerd culture out there. It's like proclaiming to be an expert in any kind of like major culture. It's like for me to say, like, yeah, I'm totally a master of American culture, because that's an easy thing to do, or to be like to fully grasp all of the intricacies of all the various subcultures that exist from all of the regions around the United States. Like, it can't be done. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with nerd culture. But I definitely have always kind of felt that sort of need to know enough, and to, like, so I've definitely, like, in the same spaces, felt that sort of base insecurity of, yeah, if I don't, if I don't happen to catch, Ashley made a reference to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and I haven't gotten around to reading it yet. And that's like one of those things, where I was just like, oh shoot, that's one more thing that I definitely need to pick up, like from nerd and geek culture. And I think it's that kind of thing that, because there is so much, we all know little different pieces here and there. So we come together and we're like, yeah, but like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And then I'm over here like, oh, shoot, I haven't read that yet, so that must make me not enough of a nerd kind of thing.
And then we publicly shamed him.
Right. And then I turn around and start dropping, like Star Wars terms, and suddenly I can leave these two in the dust. So,
oh, yeah. The last time we played a Star Wars RPG, I do believe I said I was going to drive the ship.
you did indeed say you were going
to
drive.
And then our friend Chris,
familiar,
who was GMing at the time, penalized me for it in game, which was earned. It was earned.
Pretty sure you get disadvantage on your next attack. It was pretty fantastic.
It was bad. It was. I don't even know why I said driving. I know better than that. Anyway, what about you, Alan? Or do you have
no?
More?
Yeah, I was actually just going to say the same thing.
No, it. It's an interesting concept, trying to think through the finer details of what makes one geek enough and or nerd enough to be able to call oneself that. I know for the longest time, I definitely was more on the nerd spectrum, in that technology and doing that type of thing was more of my jam. And that was kind of how I found my way into geekdom and into the realm of being a nerd and a geek. And I, for a while there, I affectionately referred to myself as the bastard child of a geek and nerd, because I felt like I was techie enough to at least have a general understanding of enough stuff to be able to call myself a nerd. And being a professional photographer now, I nerd out about cameras all day long, every day of the week, and twice on Sunday. I mean, that's just what I do. But then I spin, and I pivot, and I play Dungeons & Dragons 2 to 3 times a week, and we play all sorts of different board games, and we play video games, and we Twitch stream, and so I definitely have a foot firmly in the geek camp, too. And so I definitely understand that tension, though, of liking something enough that you're like, oh, this is one of my things. This is something I really enjoy. But to not feel confident enough to say, no, I'm a geek, or no, I'm a nerd. It takes a certain level of confidence in the community to be able to say that and know that you're not going to be ridiculed for that. So, like, for instance, one of the best examples I can give of this is, so I have always loved fantasy and sci-fi, and I'm a little bit late to the game on this, but I have become a huge geek when it comes to Patrick Rothfuss and the King Killer Chronicle series. I'm not kidding when I say I've read and or listened to The Name of the Wind 5, maybe 6 times at this point, and I've gone through his second book, The Wise Man's Fear, at least 4 times, and then his novella about one of his characters, The Slow Regard of Silent Things, all these will be found in the show notes, by the way, at least 3 times, and have an autographed copy of that book. I am obsessed.
I'm truly wondering how many people have lost bets as to what episode you'd bring up Patrick Rothfuss.
That
I can
is...
picture my brother handing his girlfriend Amy $20 right now.
I made it 1 episode. Sorry, guys. Y'all know me. That's it's an obsession. But for a while there, I'd been aware of The Name of the Wind and The Kingkiller Chronicle for 3 years before I picked it up. And then we discovered one of our good friends, Brandon, had the book. And I was like, oh, that'd be great if I could borrow that from you. 5 days later, I was finished with the first one. And then 26 hours later, I was finished with the second one. I happened to have a sick day in there, but it was over 1,000 pages in 26 hours.
That is madness.
Yeah. When I read, and nothing else happens. But all that to say, there are some people who might be partially into something, like another series that I enjoy quite a bit is Dune. But I like Dune, and I really enjoy Dune, but I don't know if I would go so far as to say, like, I'm a Dune like geek or a Dune nerd. Because I know enough, but I'm not confident in how much I know. And I think knowing some of that community and knowing... not that the community is hostile, but wanting to impress said community with my knowledge. And I think that's what it comes down to, being able to be safely indoctrinated? That's probably not the right word. Safely welcomed into a community enough to be able to say, this is a thing I enjoy. I think I am a nerd of this. And have other people come alongside of you and go, yeah, let's go!
Well, I think you made an important distinction. And the thing that I kind of want to get into... at some point, how we interact with others who claim interest or knowledge in the thing that we are also very interested or knowledgeable in. But first, I kind of want to cover these dictionary definitions of the words, because it was really interesting getting into the etymology of these words themselves.
Yeah. Can I actually just interrupt for a second? Because it's funny to me, because they're also sort of, at least from an abstract kind of... subjective sense, they're very fluid terms, in the sense of, like, the way Alan basically just defined it, like, I would have flipped both of those entirely the other direction, where to say, like, if you're super into tech and, you know, doing computer stuff and that kind of thing, you're a geek, and if you're hardcore into, you know, D&D and Star Wars and all those things, you're a nerd. So, like,
do you think that has to do with, like, the labels on things that we have now? Like, we have Geek Squad and we have the Nerdist, and the Nerdist is pop culture and the Geek Squad is tech. Because growing up, it was the opposite for me.
See, I would have to say no, but then I mean, probably the one thing that would have started to define that for me would have been Geek Squad.
Okay.
Beyond that, I wouldn't have had any context for it. Even so, I think there's a whole... I think we'll cycle back to that here in a minute. So
oh,
I'd
we
like
will.
To hear...
we will. So, okay. So I went on Merriam-Webster.com, the primo of all online dictionaries, as my friend Rob will attest and has brought me along board. So for geek, the definition of geek, it has three definitions. The first one you are never going to in a million years be able to guess.
Interesting.
The other two you may have guessed or have heard at some point. So the first definition of geek, and is now the only definition I will ever go by, a carnival performer often billed as a wild man whose act usually includes biting the head off a live chicken or snake.
So, like, Kraven the Hunter and Ozzy Osbourne are geeks.
Yes. Yes. Apparently, cool. According Indeed. To this definition, they are geeks. They are the most geeky. You could call them extreme geeks. Okay, the second definition is a person often of an intellectual bent who is disliked. The third is an enthusiast or expert, especially in a technological field or activity, hence computer geek. Nerd is the more conventional one that we've seen. It only had one definition, according to Merriam-Webster. And this is an unstylish, unattractive, or socially inept person.
Wow.
Especially.
Thank you for that, Merriam-Webster.
Yeah. Especially, and this is emphasized, and you know because it's in italics, one slavishly devoted to intellectual or academic pursuits. Computer nerds, single-minded math and science nerds. So one seems to have to do more with intellectual collection of knowledge and data. And a geek looks, according to the definitions, more your actual savvy, like physical savvy for something, your aptitude in doing a thing. Also, you know, if you have a penchant for biting live animals in the head, you are now a geek. Probably another... field. A lot of people are like, oh, yeah, I'm into that.
Why didn't I get my degree in that?
Right.
Was Pac-Man a geek?
I feel like we'd be hide nothing more that I want than to be a carny someday. Was Pac-Man a geek? Yeah.
Was
well,
Pac-Man
no, they were ghosts that he ate.
Ghost snakes.
But they have to be live. It says a live chicken or a live snake. Not a ghost.
Okay.
Live.
So not.
That's fair.
Anyway, so Kyle, you mentioned the fluidity of the two terms and how they're kind of used interchangeably. And I don't know if you're familiar with XKCD, the webcomic.
No.
Elon, are you?
We
have a book of their comics. A friend gave us a long time ago, and they have this great little comic, and it's very simple. It's just a Venn diagram. One circle is geeks. One circle is nerds. And where they intersect. All it says is, people with strong opinions on the distinction between geeks and nerds.
That sounds about right.
And it really just cracks me up, the arguments that I've seen. Because I read several articles just this morning trying to pin down what each one was. And they really kind of came down the list line. Nerds are those that are focused on intellectual pursuits. Geeks are those that are more interested in pop culture. Which I have heard more often than not. But another thing that was interesting is just from Google statistics on their search history, et cetera. You know, the term nerd was, I think, popularized or maybe even coined more in the 1950s. Mm. And you see that a lot of movies depicting the 1950s and the, you know, split groups in high school, et cetera. But suddenly you get this burst of interest in people using the term more often, starting in like 2010, which I think is where we start to see the rise of this sort of secularization of nerd culture. It's suddenly cool to be interested in all the things we got beat up for,
right.
Like in high school.
Right.
And all of us are like, wait a minute, yeah. I liked this before I was cool. And you can't say that anymore because then that labels you a hipster.
Yeah. It's the worst.
That
it really
it does.
Is.
Right. So... while it's exciting because then you've got all these people who are interested in the things that you want to talk about all the time, it's also then frustrating because then you sometimes run into people who either like fetishize the idea of being a nerd or a geek, you know, people who wear horned rim glasses because it's popular and makes them look smart. And they're like, I'm a nerd. It's like, no, you're not. When was the last time you literally did anything without your phone? And then you've got other people who kind of just treat being a nerd like a hobby. They're just like, oh, I'm a nerd.
Right.
I like to play Settlers of Catan every once in a while. I know how to play it. No, you're not a nerd. And I don't like to put hard and fast lines on whether you're a nerd or a geek, but there's some people you just meet and they say that they're a nerd and I just be like, I want to slap you.
Yeah. Well, I think that's actually a great sort of transition point into where I know we're kind of headed topic-wise here is the challenge, I think, approaching it as the people that we are, is we're all deeply invested in these things. You know, like, let's take Dungeons & Dragons as kind of a prime example, because that's something that all three of us do constantly.
Right.
And that we all very much love. And, like, there's so much of our, you know, we pour so much passion and so much interest and so much time and effort into specifically D&D or all of these other, you know, nerdy things that we're into, that it becomes a very significant part of our identity. Mm-hmm. And so I think the challenge that the casual nerd, if you will, poses to our situation is that, for us, it's an identity. It's a matter of who we are. For them, it's just sort of that's neat. You know, I'm just going to show up and engage
in
that.
Oh, that word. That's neat.
I picked it up because I've been spending so much time with you guys, and you use it all the time.
You're welcome.
There's the challenge, because for us, it's deep and it's meaningful and it's something that we truly love. And so to have people who come and try and engage us there, it almost becomes not necessarily like a challenge to our identity, but almost like you just don't get it. Like you're approaching our identity from a very superficial standpoint.
Sure. I guess the thing for me is, because I always want to welcome people into a thing if they're just starting to get into something, like, yes, like D&D. If someone,
sure,
like, I would love to try D&D, I would always invite them to play in one of our sessions or whatever, or set something up like a dungeon call for them to try it out.
Right.
I think where I get really frustrated is when those people are like, yeah, I love it, I'm such a nerd, I'm into this, and then they never show up again. Or they don't claim you in public space. They're just like, no, that's like a thing I do on Thursday nights. I don't want to talk to you outside of Thursday nights. You're like, cool. So I'm your hobby. Love it.
Right.
Feel so valued. And this is when I was starting to think about these terms of nerds and geeks, because really I use them interchangeably, like Kyle was mentioning.
Right.
Was I started to then think about nerd culture itself and how it classified various types of nerds. And I typically don't like stereotypes, but there are a few classes where we use stereotypes specifically just to start talking about things and give boundaries for terms to provoke further conversation, kind of like a trampoline into the next depth,
sure,
layer of depth. And two terms that I kind of started to attach as I was thinking about different types of geeks or nerds that I've run into that either built into me or didn't and in influenced the way I invest in geek culture a little more, excuse me, is I started thinking of geeks that are builders and geeks that are collectors or hoarders, which would like be a more aggressive term. But the thought behind that is this. So geek builders being people who invest in a community, try to create opportunities for people to learn more about the community, whatever it is, mm-hmm, D&D, sci-fi show, whatever, and who are very welcoming and patient and want to instruct. And they're never weird about the instruction. They're always just willing and welcoming and creating spaces for people to learn those things. Like our friend Dennis, yeah, is a really good builder in the Greek. We're all frat guys now.
Hey.
No, never again. He's a really excellent builder in the geek community because he's always giving opportunities for people to learn. He never shames anybody for not knowing something. Like there are a few times where he and I have been talking and there was a game I didn't know. And he's just very patient about teaching you about that game, so long as you show interest.
Very much so.
And then there are people that are collectors or hoarders where it's like what Alan was describing and what you were describing, Kyle, where you feel like you never know quite enough to be a productive member of that group or of,
sure,
said fandom. And so they're always measuring you. They're always measuring how much paraphernalia you have, how many comic books you have,
mm-hmm,
or how many hours you have invested in a game, how much you know. And I probably, I mean, I'm just venturing a guess. I probably run into like the collectors or hoarders the most only because of how people engage with quote unquote geek girls or gamer girls or fake gamer girls all the time and how quickly we like to label those women as to not being geek enough because I'm constantly tested by them. Well, how much do you know about, you know, Wonder Woman's actual identity and you know, how sure. the comic books built up out of one another or how much Firefly did you actually watch and when did you start? Did you start when it was on TV?
Mm-hmm.
Like, does that matter? I like it a lot and I'm right. willing to learn more if you provide an opportunity for me to do so.
Yeah. Alan, do you have
right. Like when does what barrier of entry actually matters? Like when does it matter if you got into Buffy the Vampire Slayer when it was on television, or you're someone like me who knew it existed and didn't grow up in a household where Buffy was something you could watch.
Right. Right.
And then you come to it later, and I'm completely being honest, I still haven't really gotten into it. That was purely a case in point example.
Right, but like Kyle was saying, there's so much to watch and right. read and right. play. You can't possibly know all of it.
Right.
You wouldn't go outside. You would never talk to no. another living being. You would just be consuming stuff constantly.
Right.
And that's kind of where I've seen a really positive shift in even like the Twitch streaming community is this push for health and, mm-hmm. and wellness and looking out for one another and making sure people are staying not just physically healthy, but also mentally, emotionally, spiritually healthy as
Definitely.
Well. Calling each other out and being like, hey, when was the last time you saw your family? Which I really appreciate because I don't know if that was encouraged as much when we were kids, at least.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's definitely like that. That's a huge part of it is recognizing that. Like, I think throwing a little vulnerability into this for myself, and I kind of already mentioned this, but you know, for me, I come into this culture really from a place of relative insecurity where. You know, it's not something that was prominent at all in the culture that I grew up in. And it was something that I basically had to find. And as we discussed in our first episode, I got lucky and I happened to find a friend group who was into the same things.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked out nicely. But I think this is where maybe I see a little bit of the backlash of the never having established myself in an online community the way that maybe you guys did. Because now I'm at the point where I'm looking around and realizing like, how do I kind of work my way into that world now and, you know, speak on a grander scale rather than just like, you know, the handful of friends that I have, how do I like step out into this world and into this culture, and be sort of a productive member of the nerd society, if you will, and have a voice there and be able to, you know, kind of live in that realm. And it's, I think the challenge is I feel that pressure and me being so good at kind of putting that pressure on myself, to say that, oh, but if I absolutely master nerd and geek culture first, then there's no way that they could reject me. Right. Like, and I think that you're very much right. And I, again, haven't seen that as much not having that online presence. But to have these communities building up around that. And I mean, I've seen that. As well in the areas that I have explored. I mean, getting into, you know, a lot of different games and like I used to play with a group of friends in high school. I used to play Star Wars Miniatures for like 5 hours every single Saturday. That was like, that's what we did. We just got together. We played Star Wars Miniatures just every single weekend, like for 2 or 3 years in high school. And it was, you know, when I first started getting into the game, it was so great because these friends were just like immediately they're like, here, take a whole bunch of, you know, pieces because it's a collectible game where you have to actually essentially buy to play. And they're just like, here, take all of these old figures, you know, get your collection started, get yourself introduced to the game. And they were so gracious in that and so excited to have other people to play with, you know, in the first place, that it was so great because it was just here's a great intro into this community and into this game. And I actually experienced that after I moved here. Ashley mentioned our friend Chris earlier. He and I used to be roommates. And he and I got into the Star Wars X-Wing miniatures game. here actually last summer, and we started playing that, and we went to start playing it in a local game store, and we very much ran into the same kind of environment where we showed up and the guys were like, here, you know, here's a few, you know, cards and a few pieces to get you kind of established in the game and get yourself going, you know. And so it's still like, I've definitely encountered enough of that to know that it's there. But definitely, or evidently, not quite enough to assuage my own insecurities over the issue to say, like, but of course what I know is enough, right? Like, to just be like, yeah, I'm a nerd and I'm established in that identity, and I can be secure in that. And that's clearly, I think that that's kind of where the balance ultimately lies, is can I be that, and enter into those communities with the sort of self-assurance that even if I don't know every single reference that they dropped, that they're still going to accept me.
Yeah, definitely. I'm trying to figure out where I land in that spectrum, in all honesty. Like,
between nerd and geek?
No.
Builder and collector?
Builder and collector. Because I come from a family, a historic family of nerds, in that at least two of my cousins for sure are computer engineers. Like, that's what they do for a living. And most of my family is very techy. And we played tons of board games growing up. And they collected tons of board games. Like, one of my cousins, it's fabulous. He has an entire room of his house dedicated to board games.
Future life goals.
Yeah, it's so overwhelming and so impressive. And you're like,
it's fantastic.
I'm not worthy.
It's kind of just like, I want to bow down. It's like, yeah. This is an achievement. You should have a badge of honor in the nerd fiefdom. Like, this, you deserve this.
But that's the thing. If nerddom is a fiefdom, I don't want to be a part of it.
But I think because of where my brother and I grew up, and my brother was definitely a builder in that he introduced me to a bunch of things, even though he didn't he taught them more as games and taught them more as things of that he kind of thought were kind of cool, but then it gave me the freedom to go in and find the things that I really enjoyed. So he was the first person who introduced me to Age of Empires 2 and Civilization 2, which we were playing on one of our first computers side by side. We would take turns playing this game and playing Civil War Generals 2 against each other and just playing all these cooperative board games or cooperative computer games against each other. But it also led to, when he went away to college, sneaking up when I was supposed to be in bed, when he would come home for break, and my parents would go to sleep, and I would go to bed at 10 like I was supposed to, and then sneak up at 10:30 when I knew both my parents were asleep. And we would play Perfect Dark until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and then talk about life. And in the midst of that, be able to do that. So he definitely built in this community. He definitely built into me and then kind of gave me the freedom to be like, no, you're you. Like, you're a nerd. Like, this is just who you are. So, okay. And it gave me the freedom to be like, ooh, here is EverQuest, and here is Dungeons & Dragons, and here is all of this other nerdy stuff I picked up over the years. And he turned right back around a couple years ago. It's like, whoa, this is new. Like, whoa, when did you get into all of this stuff? And so it's been fun getting to know each other again as adults and seeing, like, yeah, I guess I did kind of jump in the nerd boat and just row my way down that river and fall over the waterfall.
Yeah. Right, but he invited you into that space.
He did.
He saw something in you that made him think, Alan might be into this. I have some resources for him. Let's see if it takes. It's the same thing that we're kind of doing with my cousin Tyler. He just turned 13, and he was just a kid that I looked at and I thought, I recognize him. I see myself in the way that he interacts with people, in the way that he engages with the pop culture that he's interested in. So for his birthday, for his 13th birthday, Alan and I just kind of decided, let's see if D&D is something he'd be interested in. We got him the starter set, and we ran through, you know, an adventure with him. And he took to it so quickly. He is a better role player than most adults. I know. He really got into it. He's very creative, and it was so exciting to see that. And it was what was interesting to me is, so role playing games can be really intimidating to get into because it's kind of like structured improv in that there are really hard and fast rules. You can interpret them as you will depending on your group. But then, you know, a lot of it is creating a character that you're invested in and have a, you know, a backstory for. At least for me, it makes it more fun if it has a backstory. And having a particular way of talking if you're really into it. So Alan and I were going full bore with voices and mannerisms and things, and I thought, we're going to freak him out. This kid's never going to talk to us again. And he was hesitant at first, I think, because I saw him starting to measure himself up against us and going, can I fit in? Am I good enough for this? Mm-hmm. And he tried a little bit. And then he kind of watched our reactions to what he tried. I think he tried an accent for a little bit. And we were really excited about it, but we didn't overwhelm. It was kind of like a skittish deer, like, oh, don't spook him. Mm-hmm. But then he saw us react positively in that we didn't shame him. We didn't make fun of him. We didn't go, why are you talking weird? And then he tried a little bit more. And then his body posture started to change. And he actually sat up a little straighter.
He did.
And he became so focused. And it made me really excited to see him realize that he fit in. And that he wasn't going to be shamed for the fact that he was actually interested in something. And that he could try things out and fail sometimes and it not be a larger issue. Because you know when you're playing a video game and you screw up, your character dies, whatever.
Right.
Right? And sometimes if you're playing an online games, people will rip on you so hard for having messed up. But here, he wasn't getting ripped on. Because his mistakes could be, the story could adjust and we could move forward or we could find something interesting to say about whatever quote-unquote mistake he made or mistake I made or whatever. And the fact that he had a space to kind of flex with that and be told, no, you're cool too. You're one of us.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. So now he's going to two different D&D groups a week. He just recently hung out with some of our mutual friends' kids. And he asked his mom, he's like, do you think I could bring D&D? Like, do you think they'd be into it? And she was like, of course, Tyler, you can try. And he was like, what if they don't know? And she's like, then you just teach them. And Tyler is so private that in the past, he would have never done that ever. And he did. He actually brought it and he taught them. And from what I understand, it went really well because then he later said, you know, do you think we could hang out with them again? Which again, he never does. And then he's staying over at our place for about a week in July. And we told him, we're like, we're going to introduce you to all of our nerdy friends, and we're probably going to play more D&D and some other board games if you want. And this is a kid that, again, would be really timid about showing interest in anything, and he is, I guess, asking his mom constantly, when are we going to Alan and Ashley's? When am I staying over there? Do you think I could stay longer? And it was so exciting to hear that he felt comfortable enough to ask for what he needed and what he wanted in that way. It's because it's so hard to, I think we can all identify with this, asking for what we need emotionally. It's so hard to be that vulnerable.
Right.
And I think that's where geek and nerd culture really appealed to me, because once I found people who are just as manic about the things that I was interested in, it created a safe space for me to say, I love this thing. Do you also love this thing? Can we love this thing together?
Right.
Can we talk about it? Will you not get tired of me?
Right.
Will you not mock me for being interested in this? And so that's where I really like identifying who the builders are in any community, whether it's a geek community or a sporting community or, you know, a church community, whatever, who the people are that are building into other people saying, I don't care what level you're at in this. If you're invested, if you like it, please join us. You have a seat at the table.
Yeah, I think that I love hearing stories like that. And I think it's something that I very much aspire to be. And it's something that I aspire to do. And I think it's something that I admire more and more as I kind of step further into this world than I think I have. Because I think, very much like Tyler, I'm also a very private person, and that's what's a big part of what's kept me away from this conversation for so long. Mm. And for, you know, so I have been more of the collector, because it's a safer space to be, because then I don't have to deal with the rejection, and I don't even have to worry about whether or not it's going to come.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah. It's just like, if I can just sit back and collect, I can have that identity and I can own that identity, and I never, ever, ever have to worry about the emotional backlash that might come if people reject me, or if, you know, those groups don't think I'm good enough. Right. And again, it's not something that I ever necessarily experienced from geek and nerd culture. Like, I've definitely, and you mentioned this again earlier, Ashley, that something we all got picked on for by people who weren't a part of that culture. But I think that actually, for me, raises a huge part of this as well, is even in the Merriam-Webster dictionary definition of what it means to be a nerd, there are some pretty blatant derogatory stereotypes.
Right, right? Unstylish, unattractive,
like,
socially
cool,
inept.
There go all of my chances for, you know, ever being in a relationship ever. And it's like... Because that's the stereotype that we live with. And I think, you know, I think as much as it is a stereotype, and I don't want to overemphasize that or over validate that as the truth, the problem is so many of the nerds and geeks that I've encountered have that story. Like, we all, generally speaking, come to that same space of saying, like, yeah, you know, I'm a huge Trekkie. I love Star Wars. I love, you know, Marvel comics, whatever it might be. And the rest of the world makes fun of me for it all the time. So I feel pretty bummed about that one. And like, I think so many of us have had that experience that I think there is so much hesitation in that community. And I think that's where that perception can often come from of, I have to be good enough to fit into this community, because it's like, this is what I love. Right. Mm-hmm. And so to hear stories of people like Tyler, and to be able to be someone who is investing in someone else, I think is a really beautiful way to express what it truly means to have your identity rooted in being a nerd. And in a lot of ways, to bridge this gap that we're trying to bridge as a podcast, it's also a very good expression of the Christian life. And I think, you know, regardless of whether you're listening to this because you're a nerd or because you're more from the Christian side, I think this is a place where these two very much meet in terms of everyone needs community. Like, we all need spaces to live in, to be comfortable in, to just be ourselves. We need to be able to invest in the things that we love. And that's where, for us, we all have, you know, the same space to say, I love nerd culture and I want to be a part of it, and I need that to be a safe space for me, because it's so much a part of who I am. And when it's not validated, I shut down and I don't know what to do with myself and I don't know where to go. But when I have it, when it's available to me and I'm accepted in that community, that's when we flourish, because that's when we're truly, you know, part of, you know, getting that validation to our identity and having that become a safe space for us to actually evolve in that.
So I think that's definitely a good place for us to begin our transition to the secondary topic for this one. But we definitely want to hear your feedback. If this is resonating with you, if this is a topic or any of the bits that we've hit already are things that you feel strongly about or you identify with, or you're like, I'm not sure that I quite line up with you on that, but I'd like to have a conversation about it. This is where our social media outlets come into play. You can email us at minmaxpod@gmail.com. You can hit us at Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat at minmaxpod.
I keep forgetting we have a Snapchat.
That's crazy.
We can snap people even though Snapchat is dying. But, I mean, that's the state of social media. Things grow, things die. Everything has its time and everything dies. Doctor Who reference. Ha-ha!
Oh, here, I'm just thinking of lines from songs from musicals.
What musical
like
were
Sunrise,
you thinking?
Sunrise, Sunset from Fiddler on the Roof, in case you weren't familiar. Also, a song from Pippin. Everything has its season, gotta find my corner of this. No.
Pippin, I'm not familiar with.
It's a real weird,
nerd, there's the theater nerd. Sorry, continue.
Just ignore that. I'm sure I'll be one of very few people listening to this podcast that knows any of the musical references I'm making.
So, another bit of feedback that we got as a question was asking us to define what on earth is min-maxing and how does that apply to both aspects of the podcast, straddling the tension of being a podcast that wants to talk about the nerd community and nerd culture and geekdom, and also having one foot strongly in theology and talking about how geekdom has its effect on the church and how church has its effect on geekdom and where that Venn diagram crosses over and where we're hopefully trying to stand in the middle of theology is awesome and it's important. Geek culture and geeks and geekdom is important and it is really valuable for those who are into it and valuable for the community as a whole. I will say this as a point. I'm borrowing this from Liam O'Brien, but I definitely say this regularly. You're going to hear us talk about Dungeons and Dragons a lot, but I firmly
<You bet. laughs>
I firmly believe that if more people played this game, the world would be a better place. We would learn empathy. We would learn to see from another person's point of view and be able to realize, maybe something that I'm doing is not communicating what I'm intending to, or maybe I feel really strongly about this, but I'm being a jerk about how I'm trying to communicate it. Maybe I need to learn to see from the other side of the table. So, min-maxing. Ashley, Kyle, what does that mean to you? What do you think it means? I've got a couple definitions already pulled up, and I also have my own definition, so.
Okay, so when I Googled this after you had suggested it, because when we were, I really blindsided the guys with coming up with a podcast. I just, in a group chat that we had, I was like, we should start a podcast. I'm like, wait, what? Why?
And yet.
Right. And the
here
first,
we
didn't really have a name for it. And immediately Alan was like, we should call it Min-Max Podcast. And I was like, that sounds catchy.
I wouldn't say immediately. There are a lot of pretty awful names.
Were
spewed
there?
Because
I don't remember any of them.
That's
maybe that was a private conversation you guys had.
No, that was definitely in the thread. There were a lot of names. They're just,
then it needs to be
they're,
publicly
they're
said.
Off, they're better off forgotten.
I ignored all of those.
Which simply means, guys, I win. We named the podcast Min-Max. I won.
You did win, but we also didn't put up much of a fight.
This is true.
I still won. That is the point of this discussion.
Anyway, as you were saying.
Okay, so Alan didn't mention the term min-maxing a lot when we were in our own D&D campaigns or Pathfinder campaigns, in reference to the way he was strategizing the build of his own characters, and that he, from what I understood, it was he was maximizing key stats of his character that he felt was the most important, whether it's for his class or the race of character, whether he was an orc or a gnome or something. And then so much so that he was overpowered in those areas, or OP is what they say in gaming. So much so that then any sort of hindrances on the character are kind of overshadowed in that way, like having strong offense so you're not really needing a defense too much. But I've also heard alternatively that you are maximizing certain stats and then just ignoring any sort of hindrances that puts on your character and almost emphasizing how bad they are in one area. So they've got a ton of strength, but they're really ungraceful. And so you're just playing it that way. So I've heard it a couple different ways. Kyle, what functioning definitions have you worked with?
I think it pretty much exactly the same as what you just described. Because I very much had to do the same thing when Alan suggested it. I was like, okay, yeah, I also have a working general thought. But I Googled it and I was like, yeah, okay, this is, you know, you get pretty much that exact same definition. It's maximizing strengths and minimizing weaknesses. And I think it's a term that kind of tends to have a derogatory meaning in a lot of circles. Or
I only ever hear it mentioned in a derogatory
right.
or
People
like kind of frustrated.
Right, yeah, like stop min-maxing. And I think there's a dimension of it that's rather competitive, especially mm-hmm. in like like an in-person role-playing game, because I'm thinking also comparing this to video games, video role-playing games. That the problem sort of becomes that, like, you're so into a role-playing game's competitive nature, which is really not necessarily what a role-playing game is designed to emphasize in a lot of cases. You know, whereas, you know, if you sit down with someone and you're playing a board game like Risk, for example, the point is to dominate the world and win. Like, there's a very clear objective in a game like Risk or a game like Monopoly or, you know, chess even. Whereas with something like D&D, Pathfinder, any other role-playing system that you're playing, you have more of a tendency towards building a story and trying to collectively create this narrative. And again, it depends on what you approach D&D for. You know, different people play different, or play D&D for different reasons, or play role-playing games for different reasons. I think the three of us definitely tend to be a little more story-oriented. We like to come into it with the intention of, we're all going to come with good characters who have well-developed backstories, and we want to, you know, collectively tell a story with our DM, our dungeon master, narrating that and kind of walking us through this sort of epic world that he or she has created, or, you know, that they are investing in if it's a pre-made setting for the campaign. So I think that's maybe where the min-maxing piece comes in, where it's like you come into D&D with this mentality of, oh, I'm going to be like the best possible version of this character, where I can just like crush any enemies, you know, like, or I'm the big strong guy who can just like smash a dragon, you know, with a single hit kind of thing. Whereas, you know, if you're speaking more from like a narrative perspective, you might be a little more focused on emphasizing, like, what would my character actually do in this circumstance based on the personality that I've given them and the, you know, the flaws that they have and the, you know, kind of psychology that I'm working with this individual. And that's where you might see people take certain perks or advantages. You know, as you're leveling up in a game, a role-playing game, you get new features for your character gets better. And in a lot of cases, you get to choose those things. So you kind of, your character gets shaped as they grow within this universe. So you have, you know, room to either focus specifically on being the best possible, you know, fighter or wizard or whatever it is that you can be, or you branch out based, again, on that character development. In which case, maybe your character isn't the best, you know, in a combat situation that he or she could be, but you've built around who that character kind of is as a person. And I think that's maybe where some of that positive and negative comes in. And I know, like, from my perspective, again, I was thinking about this a little bit in terms of video games also, because I'm a huge fan of The Elder Scrolls V, Skyrim. And I know I love to play stealth characters in that game, but the problem with playing a stealth character is if you focus too much on stealth, you're very, very good at sneaking. And it's very, very hard for enemies to find you, which means you can usually avoid most combat. But when you get into a combat situation, because you become such high level and you're facing such tough opponents, if you're so focused on sneak and you're not focusing on, like, your ability to fight, suddenly the enemy finally finds you and you can't face them because they're way more powerful than you. So you're sitting there hitting them with your sword or shooting them with your bow and you're doing, like, no damage. So your only choice left is to run away. And so I think that's where you might see kind of min-maxing play out in a different way, where if you don't find ways to kind of balance out your character, sometimes that can come back to be a problem for you later on.
Yeah, definitely. And so as the resident min-maxer here at the table, that's not something I realized I was until I started playing Dungeons & Dragons, until I started playing Pathfinder, until I made a Shadowrun character and ran a session as a Shadowrun character. And it, for me, definitely min-maxing is maximizing. I'm kind of a hybrid of both of the definitions as you guys have been talking about. So I try to take into account the type of character that I'm trying to build. So, for instance, one of my favorite characters that I love to play that I've been running in RPGs, be that on the table or on a computer game for the past 10 years, is KJ. KJ is a gnome. And in the latest iteration of KJ, he is a barbarian. So that is a thing that shouldn't happen, because gnomes are people who tinker, not are barbaric and or being super strong things. Part of what I decided going into that character was, like, I want to make a gnome barbarian, because you get the rage ability as a barbarian, which means you get a boost to your strength and you also get several other abilities. Being a gnome, you were exceptionally good at sneaking, And so, but you naturally aren't as strong. I believe they start with like a -2 in strength. So I'm balancing out, I want to be good at sneaking, but I also want to be really good at hitting things. So that's how that worked. But what I always do specifically with regards to tabletop role-playing games is when I'm rolling stats, and so you roll 6 regular cube dice, so 6d6, and or 4d6 rather, and you drop the lowest. That's how you balance out your base statistics for what you put into what are called ability scores, which are what control all of the other different skills in the game. I base my character's personality around their lowest score. So if I roll really terrible in intelligence, for instance, this character might just barely be able to read, so they're not going to have tons of higher functioning thinking ability. So they might not be able to reason their way out of situations, so they're going to go linear, and it's, we need to go to there. There is a door. I will break down the door. Okay, bye, and just run to the door and smash the door down. And they might not think, oh, this door might be trapped, or there might be someone waiting on the other side of the door waiting to shoot me with a loaded crossbow. Not something that's in that type of character's just kind of mental breakdown. But that's what's fun about it, too. But at the same point, game designers hate min-maxers. Because a standard argument is min-maxers are trying to break the game. Not min-maxers are trying to maximize the potential while minimizing the risk at the same time while trying to make a character. And so that's, I like kind of living in the middle of that, in that I'm trying to get the most out of a character. Like, I made a Shadowrun character, which is a sci-fi RPG, and I intentionally made my character heavily drug dependent, like drug addiction, that I had to get a hit of something every day. If I did not do that, I lost a ridiculous amount of stats. But in my base build, I got like an additional 20 points because I took this negative. So that's an instance where I was like, okay, I have to roleplay this guy as someone who has to get a fix every day. And if I don't get a fix, things are going to get real bad real fast. And I'm like 2 days from dying. Like, that's, I was living on the edge of death the entire time playing that character, but was also really good and ended up saving the day in the session that we ran with that character, just kind of sweeping in, being able to shoot something just perfectly at the right moment and sweep in and save somebody else. It was a cool moment, but I didn't have the bonus without the risk. And to spin this a little bit and talk and to move back into Christendom. So
Christendom being what? Because there are people that aren't going
to
know.
That is
that
a very good, I dropped a seminary word there, and I did not mean to. So I guess I, dang it, that's two of them. So seminary is where people who are interested in theology and want and or have the desire and or feel the call to go into a position where they might be teaching or leading people in some theological teaching or theological formation, commonly known as pastors or priests, or some, or into the academic world and teaching in the theological sphere, go to a place to learn these things. That place is called seminary. So that's the first one that I used. Christendom is what people who are Christians refer to the world and the sphere in which we live and operate, more specifically within the teaching realm, but it's more, it also goes more broadly out into the general culture, in that anything that is underneath the Christian umbrella is referred to as Christendom. So,
how is it the photographer is always stuck with the theological terms?
It is funny, isn't it? That he's
and we just sit back and we watch.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you nod and you quietly judge me if I get something wrong.
But we'll never say anything.
No, you won't. So where I was going with that is, so within Christendom, something that happens on a regular basis is we lean so hard one way or the other on the types of people that we want leading things, or the types of personalities that we feel are going to draw people in. and we fail to recognize the weak spots, or people recognize the weak spots and be like, well, that's just not one of my giftings, so that's not my responsibility. So, for instance, someone might be really good at teaching people, and they can stand up in front of someone and they can preach. And I mean, they can preach. They can tell a good story. They can explain. They can... Oh, gosh, I'm going to drop another one. They can exegete the text. They can work within the Bible, and they can pick a specific section, and they can go in and derive the meaning that was intended and pull it out and pull the context forward and be able to explain, okay, this is what this means. This is what it meant then. This is how this can be applied and what it means now. But you sit them down and be like, I am fighting body crippling depression. What do I do? And they just like, go see a therapist. Bye. And while they might recognize that's okay, that is not one of my giftings, I should bring in a professional. I should send them to a professional who has the training in this. They might not be the most skilled in that. And they might not know how to graciously say, this is not something that I am very well equipped to deal with. I will hear you. I will be present with you. I will stand with you in this moment. I will cry with you, weep with you, be there with you. But I may not be the person that can completely help you work through this. Here is a list of people who might be really good. And if you need me to come to the first couple of sessions so you have someone who is there who is safe with you, that's fine. What do you guys think?
Well, yeah, I think we see that in evangelical culture a lot, that emphasis on call and God-given gifting, and especially in undergraduate school, we at least Christian undergraduate school, we emphasize the what are you specifically gifted in doing, and maybe not even in Christian, you know, liberal arts Christian colleges, just that in general, like, your education is about you and what you are uniquely good at and how mm-hmm. you can put your unique thumbprint on the world, and so then we emphasize that, and I've seen this a lot, at least it. Other Christian institutions where we hone in on, okay, you're being formed to do your one thing.
Right.
And I hear this from my own students because, you know, I teach speech and no one likes a speech class. Every time I pull my class, I say, so who's taken this willingly and is really excited about it? And no one raises their hands. And what I hear a lot is, I'm just not good at this. So then what that becomes is they are unwilling to try because they've already fixed it in their heads that they are not good at it, that they will never be good at it. They don't have a capacity or an aptitude to ever develop that skill even a little bit. And so I see that with a lot of other things. And Alan used the example of a pastor who is great at preaching, but is not so great at the pastoral care, at actually engaging with the mm-hmm. people that he or she is leading or teaching. And I've caught myself doing this at any point in time. I'm sure, you know, you two have done this.
Definitely.
As well.
Yep.
And it is, you know, it's a point of maturity to be able to say, I'm not great at this, but my position or the way this person regards me requires it of me right now. So I'm going to do my best and I'm going to try to learn how to do this better next time. And that's where I see, you know, if we're placing min-maxing in the real world outside of a gaming environment where that can be really detrimental. And the way you've described it, Alan, really helps me understand min-maxing mm-hmm. a lot better because I hadn't thought about that in terms of actually engaging people and how I'm developing as a person or as a Christian, how I'm min-maxing myself, how I'm really fixating on the things that I feel like I'm naturally gifted in and just focusing on those because I enjoy that I'm good at them and then ignoring all the things that I'm not naturally gifted in. And so I'm just going to ignore them because I don't want to have to deal with the stuff that I'm not naturally good at. It makes me feel bad.
Sure. Well, and I'm gonna actually take that and both affirm and challenge that a little simultaneously.
Here we go.
yeah. How pretentious of me.
Says the least pretentious person on this podcast.
Thank you for that, I guess.
You're welcome.
I don't know if I believe it, but thanks nonetheless. No, I think on the one hand, there's a very, you know, valid side of that we're hitting on, that it is very important that we recognize the things that we're good at and that we lean into those and also lean into those things that we're not so good at so that we can kind of cover our bases, so to speak, you know, especially in a role where your job, you know, especially like in ministry or something like that, where your job and your purpose is to essentially help people. It's very important for you to be able to do the best that you can to provide what people need and, you know, to provide for people's needs. On the flip side of that, I think that also comes from a very individualistic paradigm within our culture that says, I have to be good enough to do everything, right? And it's not, you know, it's not that we say that. It's not that we believe that per se, but it's so culturally ingrained in us that we live it so often, right? Whereas to say, like, whereas I think Alan's example demonstrated pretty much exactly the opposite, really, where you say, this isn't something that I'm good at, so I'm going to help you by putting you into the community of people who are, right? And that's where I think sometimes we get so easily caught up in, I need to be the one who's good at everything so that I can handle all of these issues that come through my door. Or, you know, even if you're not someone who's in a ministry perspective, like, everyone deals with this. Everyone has friends who come to them and say, you know, hey, I'm dealing with this. And you go, oh, geez, that's more than I know how to handle, kind of thing, you know. And so I think it's very true for everyone that we need to learn to recognize to some degree that it's not about being the master of all trades. It's about living within a community, bringing us straight back to kind of the first half of this podcast anyway, of, yet we all have to have those communities because we're not all good at everything. And it's silly to think that we are going to be good at everything. So to have those communities in place, to be able to say, I'm not good at this, but so-and-so over here is excellent at that. So let's go talk to him. And yeah, to be the person who says, I'll take you by the hand. I'll be there with you as we have this conversation with this person. And I think that's an important thing for us to kind of call out too in this. And again, you know, it's not a bad thing to be good at both the, you know, sort of evangelistic preaching side of things, or to just be the person who's very dynamic and extroverted and able to reach people, and also be someone who's good at genuinely connecting.
Yeah, I know my dad had a phrase that he used to use, because if you can believe it or not, at one time in my life, some might argue that I do this still to this day, I tend to act like I know lots of things when I really don't always. Sometimes I have a functioning knowledge and I make it seem like I know a whole lot more than I do. But he used to always say the phrase, you know, acting like you know something is know it all is really annoying to those of us who do. Are those of us who at least know what we don't know and who to hire. Because you might not have the best knowledge. You might know, I've got a pipe under my faucet that is leaking. I know, that is right where the P-trap fits. That is right at the U-joint. Do I have the do I know what is wrong? Yes. Should I be the one to fix it? Heck no. No. Call someone, hire someone. Bring someone in with that knowledge, because that is something I might know about, but I am not about to try to step in and go, I am the professional that can fix this. And it's knowing where our boundaries are personally of, yeah, I know something about this, or I don't know anything about this. Let's go find someone who does, so we can get either the help that you need, or we can support you in the way that needs support.
And this is where I might chip in just very briefly with a quick quote from a favorite philosopher that Socrates was so fond of saying, wisdom is knowing that you know nothing.
Yeah.
Which has a lot of meaning, I think, in this context, but go ahead.
Well, right. Well, and it's going back to what Alan was describing, you know, kind of meshing what both of you were saying. There, it's one thing to say, I don't know that I am capable in helping you or giving you the extent of the help that you are saying you need, but I am there for you while we go seek out what you need together and finding your resources. And that's another thing to say, get help, I don't want to. Kind of like when, you know, as introverts are owning their space and owning who they are, it kind of got into this space for a while, at least online, where we were using introversion as an excuse for being jerks to people, being like, well, I'm an introvert, so, or I'm an INTJ, so, you know, try to speak on my level or don't, I can't be bothered. And I see that a lot, and I think that's the mentality I'm wanting to aggressively combat against, even as an introvert myself.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Right? Is that I think the people who balance it well in, I know what I don't know. I'm going to admit what I don't know, but I'm still going to be there with you as we try to figure out how to get what you need, even though I'm not the person for it. I forgot where I was going with that. Those are the people who are the builders in the community. And then those who can't recognize their limitations or so heavily recognize their limitations and then just almost use those as badges of honor of like, I know what I don't know and I don't want to bother learning what I don't know or learning more about what I don't know, are the hoarders or the collectors, the people who are trying to nurse their egos by, see, I have all of this.
Right.
So I don't need that.
Right.
When they very much probably actually need at least a little bit of that, right. Whatever that is.
I don't have to do the hard work of community when I can have the sort of illusion of being a part of the community.
Right, exactly. And I'd be like, in a hypothetical situation, I'd be really amiss if I was like, I'm going to start a podcast. I don't need Alan, who has literally done every single tech production right. side of the podcast at all. And me knowing my limitation and also knowing my attention span, I have tried learning everything that he does for our podcast, and I just don't have the patience. I get bored really quickly, and I go, cool. Alan, you cool with this? And while he's like frothing at the mouth going, let me do it. I love doing this. This is my favorite point. Yeah, he makes that noise sometimes. It's weird. Whereas flip side, I will read all of the articles. I will read all of the books. Alan now knows my reading face because he'll start talking to me and I'll just put a finger up and he's like, you're reading, aren't you? Yeah, hold on. And so I'll do all the that book research, not to say that he is not book smart because he very much is, but I'm way more interested in that side of things.
Right.
And be like, great, research to your heart's content. Let me know, you know, give me the Cliff Notes version of what you've read. So, you know, we've got each other's backs on that. And then I know that Kyle is going to come in and also be supported in that and also probably have a much more eloquent way of putting, for the most part, I have my moments, but to be able to reemphasize a lot of the things that we're discussing and kind of be a good, not just tiebreaker, because I don't want to relegate him to that position all of the time, but...
Just most of the time.
It's like, Alan and I are different colored bricks. And we need the, you know, the cement, the mortar to bind all of us together. It's a really convoluted way of saying community's important.
Yes, it is.
So on that note, we want to hear from you guys, our community that is forming around the MinMax podcast. So if this has struck any notes with you guys, feel free to reach out to us at minmaxpod@gmail.com, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. I feel like I'm forgetting something. That is all at minmaxpod. Also, we've had a couple different people ask us how they can help the podcast right now. The biggest thing that we can ask people to do is, if you guys enjoy this, if you have found this podcast, please go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and write us a review and share the podcast with a friend. Now, that being said, I know not everyone lives within the Apple universe. I know that iTunes can be something, a bit of a pain, that because you have to install it and you have to make an account. I get it. But within the podcast universe, iTunes started the general platform that became podcasts, and they are the ones that really hold the strongest amount of power. So if you guys can go over to iTunes and like, share, review, and just kind of give us some support there, that would be the best thing that we can ask, and that would be really awesome. We've gotten a lot of cool feedback on this. We've gotten a lot of stuff. It'd be cool to see if maybe we can push this thing into new and noteworthy, because that would be a fun category, and just to get more people involved into the community. So, yeah, Ashley, where are we going next week?
So next week, we're going to be talking about D&D. So any questions that you guys have about Dungeons & Dragons or Pathfinder or any other tabletop RPG games, so RPG being role-playing games, or if you have comments, topics that where you are really well versed in D&D or that realm of gaming, and you really want us to hit on certain things, or if you have had an experience in which D&D or those types of games were presented to you in a negative light, and you would like us to defend the playing of such games,
we will gladly defend the honor of any role playing game.
Bring it on.
Well,
no. I'll- I'll defend it to my death.
Okay.
Well, I was thinking more the any. Like, I'm just thinking suddenly, wait, what if there's some really crazy and bizarre role-playing games that I don't... I don't want to completely own that statement. I will defend D&D. Let's put it that way and leave it there.
That's a safe boundary. See, right. See, that's the place you play in our podcast, is you're the boundary setter. You warn us. You're the guard. And you're like, dangerous territory. Rough waters ahead. Turn back.
Yep, I am a signpost. That's what I do.
You are a wake warning, Kyle.
Yep.
You prevent us from making too many waves.
But if you have any comments or questions on that subject, we'd love to hear you. So in the same avenues that Alan mentioned, our email, minmaxpod@gmail.com, or our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, et cetera, et cetera. If you find us somewhere that I don't know we've set up and Alan's forgotten we've set up, contact us, and then suddenly we'll be reminded that we have that. I think that's wrapping it up.
I think it is.
I believe so. Thank you guys so much for listening in. We really appreciate your participating in this discussion with us. And as both Alan and Ashley have said, give us your feedback. Let us know what you're thinking. And we really do want to make this kind of a community thing. We are trying to bridge this gap between, you know, what it means to kind of be a Christian and be in that community, and also to be a nerd and to live in geek and nerd culture also. So please, jump in, participate with us. And thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.